Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Ellie Long is Global Head of Emerging Talent at engineering giant Rolls-Royce. She leads the team that finds and develops young talent for Rolls-Royce's 50,000-strong workforce worldwide. In that role, she has been part of a pioneering new behaviour-focused hiring system that has seen Rolls-Royce redesign all its graduate programmes and, unusually, share its assessment materials publicly. Ellie graduated from Nottingham Business School back in 2015 and has been with Rolls-Royce for almost 6 years. In recent times, her success has been recognised with the Great British Businesswoman of the Year Award and an NTU Outstanding Alumni Honour. Today, she is back at Nottingham Trent to offer her expert insights into the new career currency of practical skills, professional behaviours, and the ability to tell an engaging story. Oh, how we love a good story at Nottingham Business School. So, Ellie Long, thanks very, very much for joining us here on this episode of the Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
So let's start with your own specific journey. So your first role after you graduated was in HR at energy company E.ON. What do you know now that you really wish you'd known then?
Do you know what? I think this is like an $1 million question, isn't it? That if someone could crack this, then they'd crack a lot of things in early career development. But I think reflecting back on my career, I think there's probably two things. I think the first one is be unapologetically yourself. Like, I think far too often we join organisations and we think there's a corporate culture or there's a way that you have to show up, demonstrate, even down to what you might have to wear, what notebook you might choose to take in on day one. Be unapologetically you. You've been hired for who you are. Big modern corporate organisations are looking at skills, behaviours, values, what you bring as a person. So don't try and fit a mold.
So if you want to cartwheel through the door, you do that.
Yeah. Don't, maybe not quite on a health and safety risk assessment, but yes, you be who you want to be and kind of unapologetically own that. I think we spend far too much time sometimes over analysing how we need to try and fit in. And actually a good organisation will have a culture that allows you just to be you.
So did you try to fit in at the start? Did you spend too much time agonising over that?
Yes. I always say I'm someone who can really fight for the double standards of kind of in society and also want to have pink sparkly handbags and obsessed with expensive designer jewellery. So yes, I think be who you are and kind of own what that is and recognise what your strengths are and what you can bring.
Okay. I've been obviously doing a quick Google search. Taylor Swift?
Yes, big Taylor Swift. Big Swiftie fan.
Big Swiftie. Okay. We'll live with that. Okay. So 10 years on today, you are the global head of emerging talent at Rolls-Royce. So in that 10 years, what are the experiences that have most shaped your leadership philosophy?
I guess if I think back, and it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? People say people always work for people. But I do think it's true. And when I think back about the roles that I enjoy the most or the parts of the business that I wanted to stay, 9 times out of 10, it's because you enjoy who you work for and what that leader is. And so I very much try and lead with a focus of how do I create an environment where people want to be part of that journey and they can understand what that vision is, what that strategy is, where we're trying to get to, give people purpose and meaning. And how do I create a team that people really want to be there? They want to come to work in the morning. And I think that is my biggest kind of leadership ambition, is that essentially no matter what weird and wonderful idea I'll come up with, and my team will say, oh my gosh, they can tell when I've been on holiday because I come back with a million and one ideas. But how do they get behind that with me and share that vision? That's what I think really powerful leadership is.
Okay, right. So within that, now you are, as I say, head of a department of the global business, and you're looking at emerging talent. So how do you define emerging talent?
I don't think there's a right or wrong way of doing this. I could bore you with a lot of theoretical research that's gone into what do we mean by emerging talent. But essentially for us at Rolls-Royce, it is those who are early in the stages of their career or industry. And we are focused on the behaviours, the values, the potential that they can bring.
So you know when you say early, so what kind of age are you talking?
So predominantly, we're talking about those that are kind of 14, 15, 16 upwards to kind of recent graduate age. But in its essence, is agnostic of age, because actually someone could have gone back and done a degree later in life and they are still a candidate that we might want to attract and develop. Someone might be looking to change career. So a big part of our strategy is around career changes, whether that be someone's done formal learning, they've gone back and done a degree, now they want to go and do something differently, right through to, I work in Tesco, I don't want to work in Tesco anymore, and actually I want to do something different. So it's very much about focused on how do we design experimental learning journeys, development programmes that attract those with the right behaviours, the right potential, the right skills, the right mindset, and we will develop you into what that career might look like.
You're looking at emerging talent, and in doing that, you have, in recent times, pioneered a behavioural-based approach to hiring. Now, I'll let you explain that. What is it, and why have you moved away from the traditional recruitment methods?
Yeah, and I think if you think about our world and what we're trying to achieve from an emerging talent perspective, it's very much about actually we're focused on someone's behaviours. What can they bring and what can they develop? So then when we get to a point where we want to sift and select them, and we get into that assessment journey, why would we then start drilling down into deep technical knowledge? Because ultimately, this is someone who is, in definition, early in the stages of their career.
And so traditionally, you think that hirers have gone too big on technical knowledge.
Yes. And it is not me saying, because my engineering colleagues will look at me in panic and think, oh my gosh, we're an engineering giant and we're not going to...
And you're not an engineer by trade,
and I'm not an engineer by trade.
You're a great luminary in the company, but you're not an engineer.
Yeah, and they will panic and they'll say, oh my gosh, are we now saying we don't need engineers with an engineering degree? That is not what we're saying. But actually, if we establish for different programmes, we have a benchmark of educational exit point. From that point onwards, actually, for me, it's about how do we assess and select someone based on their behaviours, their skills, what it is that they can bring, that kind of human power skill that makes them unique. And that's what we want to assess for, because that's the stuff that makes people different.
So this is not instead of any academic achievement, this is in addition to.
Yeah. And I think it's recognising that now... and I say this to graduates, a lot of graduates are graduating with first class honours, 2-1 degrees, brilliant achievement. You've learnt fantastical technical theory and technical skills that will, no matter what career, whether it's engineering or business or economics or finance, will set you up for success as you go into that organisation. But the types of graduates or apprentices that we want to target and really want to develop are those that can also demonstrate and think about their softer skills, their human skills, behavioural skills. And that's what we're focusing on in that assessment process to bring out. I always say I can teach someone how a gas turbine works. Not me personally. I've got no idea. So don't ask me. That's the next question.
But I'm just going to scratch that off the list. Yeah, carry on.
But we could teach someone how a gas turbine works if you've got the right foundational maths A level or whatever it kind of is. What we can't teach someone is to be passionate about sustainable aviation fuels and have the right analytical mindset to go off and research something and kind of go after that. It's that behavior that we want to assess.
Okay, I get that. This all sounds great, but is part of this because companies like Rolls-Royce are faced with more applicants than ever before who have ever so gently put their CVs and their applications through ChatGPT or one of the AI and produced beautiful, beautiful applications, and they're all dumped on you and you're having to find a way of getting round that?
Yeah, so I think there's two bits. I'll come back to the application point because, yes, I think there's definitely something in there. I think the first thing to acknowledge is that there's a really interesting kind of human skills capital report that shares a stat that by 2030, 40% of the skills that we need in an organisation will be different. They're not the skills that we have now. So I look at our development programmes and the kind of length that it takes us to develop a graduate or an apprentice, and when they really start adding value into our organisation, we're talking about 2030. That's when they're finishing their programs, they're offboarding. So the skills that we need them to have then are not the skills that we've got now. So we have to do something different. So that's kind of the macro external challenge that people like me in these kinds of roles are kind of talking about. You then flip that into, yes, we see a significant increase in applications for our programs, but we don't sift on CV anymore. So you can have the nicest shiny CV that you've got ChatGPT to do for you. Rolls-Royce will not ask for that at any point in our process. And that's because we're trying to assess people in a different way. So we're getting the real human in that assessment process.
Okay, well let's go down to brass tacks. If I'm a graduate of Nottingham Business School and I'm thinking, you know, I'd love to work for Rolls Royce. Yeah. What will the start of my journey, my application journey, be?
Yeah, so if we take we'll take our business. It's called the Enterprise Skills Accelerator graduate program. You'll start by completing three motivational behavioral questions as part of our online application form. They're public, they're on our website, you can pre-write them, you can kind of get them all squeaky clean and ready. They're designed to really draw out things that are specific to you. So yes, I would say drop them into ChatGPT and see how it answers it. Great starting point, fantastic kind of tool to give you the
and
bones.
I've read that you've written that. I was thinking, right, so I didn't want to say you're encouraging people to go there, but you're saying yes, you know, you're recognizing people will go there. Yep. But what you're saying is that'll give you base level. Now make
you,
it about you.
Make that about you. You tweak that. You put in the bit that only you really know about who you are. I go back to that advice I give. Be unapologetically you when you write those questions. And yes, I could sit here and say, don't use ChatGPT, write it yourself, but people are going to do it anyway. So it's like, what do teenagers do? You tell them not to do something and they're going to do it. So yes, you would complete those. You then complete some online situational tests. So essentially this is looking at real life case studies of what happens on our graduate program. They've been written by some of our current graduates. And you complete those, you select the answers that how you think you would behave. And then the top performing graduates from that pool, we then sift on those three questions that you've given us answers to.
And they will then be invited to this face-to-face start of that process.
Yeah, it's different depending on different program where we look, but it's either a virtual or a face-to-face assessment. It depends on the activities that we're asking you to do. And all of those, again, activities are based on assessing the behaviors, the skills, the kind of the future thinking mindset, learning agility, the things that are really important to us. So I use the example that we ask you to prepare a presentation as part of the assessment center, and it's on the topic of your choice. It's something that you've taught yourself, something that you're really passionate about, and how that links to Rolls-Royce. So I am going to use the Swifty example that someone did a couple of years ago, but someone did a presentation on how Taylor Swift and her Eras tour impacted the UK economy and why that would make them a fantastic kind of finance economist and what they'd learned from understanding that. That is brilliant. That is the kind of stuff we want to see. We don't want someone just to
do it. Were you on that interview panel?
I wasn't, no, but my team did run back and tell me, knowing how much of a Swiftie I am.
Okay, now part of this which fits with the zeitgeist, I know it's been a big debate online among people who do what you do, that idea of giving out interview questions before people come in for their interviews. Explain why you did that and how it's worked.
Well, let me flip it round, Mike. Why wouldn't we do it?
Yes, I've heard you say that as well. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so why wouldn't we?
Go on, actually, what was interesting when I listened to a couple of the conversations you were having online about it was that you said that you'd started that with neurodiverse candidates and that had worked very well. And you thought, well, just a minute, let's roll this out, as it were.
Yeah, so we started with doing neurodiverse candidates to help the fact that we know that they might need to prepare in slightly different ways. They learn differently, they take information in differently. So we did it to try and, I guess, level the playing field when we were doing a big neurodiversity review a few years ago. And it genuinely was a thought one weekend. I kind of went, well, why wouldn't we just do this for everyone? Like, what is the reason as to why we wouldn't? And no one yet has been able to give me a ridiculously compelling argument as to why we wouldn't. And I say play it through, because people say to me, well, one candidate will put all of those questions into ChatGPT. They'll perfectly learn every single answer. They'll make it sound super authentic. I say, brilliant. So once they've answered that question and someone asks them a follow-up, you're going to know very quickly whether they can genuinely respond to that, whether they can hold a conversation. And do you know what? If they can, brilliant. That was just their way of preparing the first part. And if they can't, then that's going to become very clear and very evident.
And if it does all collapse at that point, you still might be interested.
We might, depending on how they then recover. And if they say, oh, do you know what? Actually, I've not done a lot of research on that topic. And I use ChatGPT and I've really prepared how I thought I might answer that question. But you've thrown some. It's about how someone can have a conversation.
Thinking on your feet.
It is. Yeah. And it's not... Our assessment centres are not, we're not recruiting the next CEO in that moment. We're recruiting people into their first roles. For a lot of talent, this is their first opportunity to really do a corporate-based interview. Why wouldn't we try and help reduce nerves? Why wouldn't we help try and them prepare, to set them up for success, because ultimately we want them to do well. We want to find brilliant talent. And so in my head, this way is a way that we're giving people an opportunity to be at their best.
Okay. It's an interview, not another exam.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, I pinched that from you as well.
It is.
From numerous things you've written.
No, it is. And I always say, find me an example in the workplace where when they get onto their program, where we're going to potentially drop them into a room with an unknown person and say, we're going to ask you questions for an hour that you've got no idea what they're going to be about. It'll be something about this topic, but we're not really, it's not a real life simulation of actually what we're trying to understand from that person.
Okay, I'm with you so far. But now the $10 million question.
Yeah.
How has it changed things, and for the better?
Yes. Yeah. So I think there's a couple of different things. I think we have seen an increase in applications this year, and we've seen more people wanting to work for Rolls-Royce. And I put that down to the fact that they're seeing us as an employer of choice. They're seeing us as an early career employer that they want to work for.
Or that it's just a bit easier to get on the first rung.
Yeah, maybe they think that too. But then I would argue that we've invested a lot in them. Activities that we do at assessment centres. We've invested a lot in our assessor training and who we put in that room. So we're seeing, a very different uptake from the leaders that are being part of this process, and how we hold those conversations with future candidates. We've seen increased engagement. We don't see people drop out at many points. What you'll find is if you see a significant increase in applications at the start of the process, because they think this is a really easy process to be part of, at some point you're going to see a mass exodus of candidates, because they're kind of assuming that they're going to throw their applications out at every single organisation super easy, and then I'll cherry pick as I get more choice. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing real continued engagement throughout the process. And then we're seeing a higher conversion at assessment centre. My dream is that we see 12 candidates at assessment centre and we want to make 12 offers.
Okay. So, well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things that a lot of employers say to us is that AI means that they're just inundated with beautiful applications that have just gone through ChatGPT. And so once again, you're saying, yeah, we want to try and pare back those numbers to genuine candidates who know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we do that by the types of questions that we ask. So we're not saying tell us, as part of their application process, we're not saying tell us why you want to work at Rolls-Royce. We're saying pick a topic that you might have studied at school or university and tell us how that excites you about a future career, or pick a human skill and talk about why that makes you unique. We're asking very different types of questions, which means you're getting different types of answers, and you're really, again, seeing who that true candidate is.
So at the moment, Rolls-Royce is doing well, it would appear. Are you able to do all this, to think about what you're doing, to pioneer new material, because it's on the basis of success and other employees are having to just go with what went before?
I would say yes and no. I think there's something our CEO uses a phrase around perform and transform. So what do we need to do to keep performing as an organisation? And then actually in roles and as leaders, how do we continually transform? I think this is an example of how we're transforming. I always say we're Rolls-Royce. We don't struggle for applications. People know the name. They might think we make cars, but they
get that one right. Yeah,
but they know the name. So we could genuinely do nothing and we'd probably attract very good average candidates and we'd continue to tick along. What we're really trying to do is transform, because we can see where we're going as an organisation, where Rolls-Royce wants to get to, the big kind of strategic challenges that we're going after and the macro forces that are driving us to do something differently. But I also think we're doing it because we're an organisation that's got purpose. And I come back to that point as a leader. I have a vision. I have a goal. This is what we want to be known as an emerging talent function. And therefore, come with ideas. Come with suggestions of how we can drive that forward.
Right. You obviously have a great vision. You obviously have great goals. I can see it. But, you know, you must be surrounded by a lot of probably men of a certain age, your senior colleagues. How do you get them to come with you?
Again, I think it's a very good question. I live by a motto, which I don't know whether I would encourage or not sometimes, but it is ask for forgiveness, not permission. I think there is a level of knowing your audience. I've worked very hard to build a really strong kind of stakeholder network within Rolls-Royce of people I know that will support some of this activity. Where can you get people on side, and who are the people that will help champion? And then I think it's also recognizing I'm a leader that leads from the heart. I do something because it feels the right thing to do. Gut. Does it feel like we're caring? Moments that matter is something we talk a lot about. I recognize I work in an organization that is predominantly surrounded by engineers. Now, engineers traditionally don't follow that kind of logic. They follow data. They need numbers. They need, I guess, a story that is backed up by hard facts. And therefore, where we've tested this, the neurodiversity example being one, we had some great data around that. We've tested it in a safe space. And now we can actually tell a story that has got the emotion over the top, but actually it's got the data that starts to evidence why we might be doing some of the things that we're doing.
So it's about telling a good story?
It is. It comes back to it. It's like we can segue perfectly into what I'm going to be talking about later.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded, competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. We are recording this episode at the end of October. And tonight, you're here at Nottingham Business School giving a lecture about the new career currency, which I'll ask you to explain in a second. But essentially, you're telling students how to stand out from other job candidates, I think. So what are you going to say?
Good question. What am I going to say?
Well, this is a good practice run for you. Carry on.
No, I have definitely prepared, I promise you. It is a bit of a buzzword, and I try not to be guilty of one of these people that gets into the corporate world and likes to jump on the kind of the bandwagon of buzzwords. But I do think skills, skills-based, skills-powered organisations, however your organisation is going to talk about it, skills is going to become the new currency as we start to talk about what roles look like in the future.
So skills as opposed to?
As opposed to careers and people talking in very lineal, career structures. So at the moment, we very much talk about, I have a job and therefore I want to get to the next job. And actually the way that the world might move is that, yes, people will still do jobs. I'm not suggesting we're going to all of a sudden scrap job titles and job grades and kind of hierarchies, but actually we're going to talk much more in skills and what you can bring to an organisation and how that links to certain skills that you might need at a moment in time, because that almost becomes the way that we get work done.
So therefore, you have to be on this continuous learning
process.
Absolutely,
yeah, yeah. And I use the example of actually where we've got problems, and we do this now at Rolls-Royce, where we might have a really technical engineering challenge. How do we pull people, agnostic of job level, job role, job grade, business division, into a room to say, actually, you're here because of the skills that you bring, and therefore, how do we solve X? And you work in more of that kind of squad mentality. A lot of tech organisations have started to crack it and are kind of doing it quite well, but it's kind of focusing on how do people get known for their skills? How do you talk about skills in a different way? How do skills lead to where you've got future kind of gaps so you can then articulate how you might develop people or how you might move talent around your organisation?
Okay. And one of the phrases that you used, and it's a great phrase, and I'm sure that's why you use it a lot, and it's from the start of that process, but you're always looking for potential, not polish.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole process. Explain that.
I think if you, again, think about my world, the people we deal with, I say in some respect, sometimes we are actually talking to children. We're talking to people that are 15,
that's
16
people,
years
yes.
old. Yes, young people. They are not going to come perfectly polished for the role that we're recruiting them for. What we're trying to assess is their potential and their growth potential, their mindset. And that's why actually it's really important that you've got the right people in the room. You're looking at the right skills, you're looking at the right behaviours, you've got the right materials around you to be able to do that, because no one's going to find the perfectly qualified manufacturing engineer in someone who's aged 15, 16, for example.
Okay, I get that. But that's that looking for potential is what goes on all the way through their early career at various stages of their career, I presume. So there's a great onus on you to be able to identify that potential,
yeah.
and for people in you and your team to have the skill set to make sure that they can take somebody who's 23, 24 doing X, Y, Z and recognise that for the next five
yeah.
years they'd be as good or even better in your organisation doing ABC.
Yeah.
And how do you do that? How do you put that together?
I think it comes back to us focusing on future human skills and behaviours rather than focusing on technical capabilities. Someone could come in and they could read you the most fantastic financial report because they've learned that bit in that box. But could they take that and translate that to something in the real business world? or as financial markets change or something evolves or new technologies come through, have they got the learning mindset to be able to actually go, actually, I need to adapt. I need to change rapidly the way that I might be approaching a task or a problem or doing something differently. And so what we're essentially assessing for is someone's learning agility, their growth mindset, their kind of agility to be able to go, yeah, do you know what? I know how to go out and problem solve, or I know how to deliver systems thinking and bring people together in a room and tackle problems. Because I can't tell you what the jobs are going to be in the next 5-10 years. It's going to change. But it's those skills that we're looking for.
Dragging the conversation about to you back to you as an individual. So you've been personally recognized with multiple awards. Where do I start? NTU's Outstanding Alumni Award. Let's hang on that one. We'll play that one. So you're clearly a role model for young women entering business. How do you as an individual approach that responsibility? And probably more to the point, what advice would you give to other female graduates who aspire to leadership roles?
I think it's a big question. I try really hard to be the role model that I might like to have seen at 20, 21.
Did you see them all?
Sometimes. I think sometimes women can be really guilty of thinking that they've really earned their place here and therefore they've almost had to fight for it and therefore other women should have to fight for it. And I say actually sometimes we can be the worst at trying to champion other female talent. So yes, I try really hard to kind of think, well, what would 19, 20-year-old Ellie I'd like to have seen? I'm severely dyslexic. I try to be really public about talking about things like that, talking about some of the things that I struggle with, where I've had strengths and what my difficulties might be day to day. Because again, I think it makes someone feel more human and it kind of gives that role model aspect.
I don't want to go off down a rabbit hole, but do you feel it's held you back?
No, not when I look at it now. I think it's about reframing it. And when I talk about future skills, some of the skills that we're looking at as an organization, I would say are some of my strengths. So it's been about saying, do you know what? I'm never going to be good at those things. That is what I'm going to struggle with. How do I surround my team with the people, with the right people to help me play to my strengths? And how do I focus on the things that I know are going to make me kind of, successful in my career. But I do think it's still something that is talked about with negative connotations. And people do still see it as something that I see in our graduates, that they are ashamed to talk about any sort of neurodiversity.
So that all feeds into your be yourself authenticity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it, for me, it's that role model mindset of if I can kind of pave the way and say, do you know what, rock up to the meeting with a pink notebook, talk about the things that you're passionate about, that's allowing other kind of women to follow in that, in those footsteps, and hopefully making it easier for them. The other thing is, don't stop learning. I hear a lot of graduates say, oh, I've graduated, I'm done with education, yay,
yes,
wonderful,
yes, yes.
Don't stop learning.
Yeah, that's the future. Okay, so finally, I believe your lecture tonight will emphasize storytelling. You've touched on it. We've heard some stories already. But if you could tell one story from your own career that captures what, leadership, resilience means to you, what might that be?
I was reflecting on this in the car on the way here, which was good that you'd given me a preparation.
Oh, don't tell everybody I gave you the questions. I like everybody to think you're all ad hoc and you're on the ball. Go on, carry on.
It was this one. Everything else I can do off the cuff.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was kind of reflecting, and I think there's a couple of bits within this, but I think for me it's about, and I talk about my leadership style as having purpose. And being really clear on your purpose. And I reflect on what my purpose is. Social mobility is really critical, to why I get up in the morning and what I try and drive.
That's helping people who have challenged upbringings get on in life.
Yeah, essentially those that are, have come from different backgrounds and might not have the same support mechanisms, whatever that might look like, be able to progress in a different way and achieve what it is that they want to achieve and what's right for that young person. And I kind of reflect back and I think there was a moment when I was... I must have been 10 or 11. My dad is involved in a lot of local charity work, and I was supporting him this one particular Christmas with giving out kind of food parcels. And I remember going into a house, literally 5 minutes around the corner from where we lived. I had a nice upbringing, happy upbringing, lovely family home. And I remember going into this house and there were no carpets. It was bare floorboards. There was newspaper on the walls. There was this poor family that were struggling. And I remember talking to a girl who was probably about the same age as me, who went to a different school, again, slightly around the corner. And I remember thinking, our lives are going to become so different. And even, I was a very tenacious child, if you can't tell, but kind of even at 10 or 11, I remember thinking, this is so unfair. And how are the opportunities that I'm going to have access to? And I remember grinning my dad in the car on the way home on lots of different things. But I thinking, how are the opportunities that I'm going to have access to so different to her because of where she might have lived or what her upbringing might have looked like? And so I hold on to that story a lot when I do certain things, or I kind of look at different initiatives and projects, and I come back to it when something's really hard, or when you're not pushing something forward at the pace that you want to push it at. It's remembering, I guess, where your purpose stems from. And I try and bring that to life for my team. So again, I look at some of the stories of our graduates. We've got a couple of individuals who have come through the care system, and I hear the battles that they face day to day. And I think, do you know what? That's the reason I'm doing what I do. So yeah, my story is about how do you really have that kind of purposeful leadership.
What a great way to end. Ellie Long, thanks very, very much for being our guest here on this episode of the Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with Ellie Long, why not listen to previous episodes with the former Chief Executive of the Financial Ombudsman Service, Caroline Wyman, the founder of the amazing IF company, Sarah Ellis, or the Deputy Chief Economist at America's National Association of Realtors, Dr. Jessica Louts. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.